Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How would you like a $100 gift card for the 5150 Apparel Store? Well, right now through the end of May, you can get one. All you got to do is follow Knocking Doors Down on Instagram, like the contest post, tag 3 friends, and you'll be entered to be one of the 5 winners selected on Monday, June 1st. Must be 18 years or older to enter.
Rolling.
Come on now, touch me, baby.
Well, thanks for singing, Mikey. It is Knocking Doors Down. Jason here with you. The very gorgeous Chris Moreno.
Hey.
Looking gorge, babe.
I'm here. That's what I do.
And the fabulously tattooed, singing some Jim Morrison-style crooning over there, Mikey Naraki. What's up, brother?
What up?
We got a great episode for you today. A little bit ago, Mikey and I were able to sit down and talk with Scott Stapp, of course, former lead singer of Creed.
Mm-hmm.
His new album out now, some great tracks on there. You know, he's doing a lot to shed light on his struggles with his mental health issues, as well as his addiction, and how his new music is serving a purpose to hopefully inspire and help others, man. And it was a cool conversation.
Cool dude, man. Super so. Cool. It's weird to talk to him, you know, listening to him after all these years and talking, just like, hey, man, what's up? You know,
yeah.
It's hard to keep your composure.
Yeah, he's been through a lot.
Yes.
I mean, he's definitely, and it's fitting for the track that we're playing on radio right now, Survivor.
Yeah.
He really is. I mean, he's a testament to that. And I think, like you said, I think that music is going to be a positive thing on a lot of people's lives. I think they're going to relate to it, as well as this upcoming interview.
Yeah. So stick around for that. That's coming here in a few minutes, and we're actually going to roll a part of Survivor as we go into that interview so that you can check out that track. Of course, Scott Stapp's new album is available now, so definitely get it wherever you stream music, or if you're like me, I'm going to pick up a copy of the vinyl, because he's like,
nice.
Oh yeah, there's a cool bundle, and I love bundles. It's like,
you've
hooked me with the merch.
It's the best of both worlds. You get a physical copy, you get the download code.
Yeah,
you can't lose.
Well, of course, a lot of us, we're feeling all kinds of things right now while COVID's still going on, but things are starting to lift.
I'm over it. I'm over it.
Well, I think the world is over it.
Over it.
You know, we've talked before about how we're mentally and emotionally handling it. Of course, me as a parent, you as an uncle to nephews and niece, mm-hmm. and stuff, Mikey and Chris, you know, you with the wife. And how you guys feeling about it? Are you rushing back out? You getting right back out there? Or is much going to change for you at this point now that things are starting to lift in the community we are? Restaurants are starting to open and things of that nature.
You know, the restaurants, and there are a couple bars that have opened too, but I don't know about you guys. I'm going to chill, because once one thing opens, everyone's just going to come rushing in. You know, oh my gosh, it's a sense of normalcy, you know, going to eat and dine in. But I mean, bars kind of freak me out. Like I said, you know, people who are sick and don't know that they're sick can be in these bars, and then I feel like the numbers are going to spike back up for cases. I do.
There's a probability of it.
I mean that's my personal thoughts.
I'm still not feeling trying to go out doing the things that we were doing, especially like we were a big concert couple, like, you know, and we would take public transportation. We take Amtrak a lot. We take the BART,
mm-hmm.
and that's all going to change now. So we're definitely not thinking that Aftershock's going to happen. I know they haven't outright canceled it yet. But
when is that?
It's in October, second week of October.
Yeah, big rock festival for those listening elsewhere in California, Northern California, and Sacramento.
And we do media every year, and it's kind of like a thing we look forward to. We don't do a whole lot, and that's our big thing that we do every year. And it hasn't been canceled yet, but I don't see us doing what we did last year by taking the train the way we did and public transportation and doing it that way, because it just doesn't feel... I don't feel like it's going to be safe yet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to risk it.
I'm in no rush to kind of get the kids. I know that my son's done pretty well with it for the most part. I've obviously talked about he's got Asperger's, autism spectrum disorder. And he's had some moments, but he's not, he connects more with adults and kids his age anyway. So he's not, doesn't feel like he's missing it. But whereas my daughter, some of the households in our neighborhood, they've practice total shelter in place and their kids just play only in the backyard or whatever.
That's gotta be tough for the kids.
So it's really, really, really tough on her because she is a lot like her dad, social. I know that's been a tough thing for me. As you guys both know me, I like to sit down and bullshit with people and all that. And
yeah,
so,
I do the podcast every week at my house, and I haven't had one since the beginning of March. And that's like our weekly thing where our friends come by and say what's up and eat and have a good time. And we haven't been doing that for, it feels like, forever, but it's only been about 2 months, and it's just crazy. And even then, when we start doing that, it's going to be like, you know, I'm going to be real cautious about wiping everything down and keeping everything clean and putting new windscreens on the mics and making sure everything's as sanitary as possible. But I do want to get back to that kind of regular routine and normalcy, but without compromising anything.
Yeah, it's just going to be a process over time. Things are starting to open up. NASCAR hit the track, but they're doing races without fans. I know some of where we're at, again, we're located in California, Northern California, Central California area. Some of these tracks are going to start getting competition going again, but practicing a lot of that stuff. So, you know, hopefully, we just remain as precautious as possible. And what are you guys doing, though, for your mental and emotional state with it, though? I mean, what kind of things are helping you? I've always had this dedication to wanting to read more, and I am reading like a son of a bitch right now.
That's great.
And that's kind of been a mental thing for me to help. Self-improvement books, autobiographies, and such.
What I do is I get up every morning. I try to get up around the same time, even on my days off. I'll still shave, shower, get ready for the day.
Did you say shower?
Shave, shower. I whistled. Shut up.
Say, Sonny. Mikey looks good over there with them tattoos.
Shave, shower, all that good stuff. And just, you know, get ready for the day, even though I'm not going anywhere, just to kind of make myself feel...
Getting any action.
I'm not getting any action, dude. It's all this quarantine shit. I'm fucking over it. But, you know, and, you know, still trying to work out as much as possible, eat well. I want to, you know, come out of this whole quarantine thing without the quarantine 15. You know, not trying to pack that on. So
yeah, we've been doing walks. We've been looking forward to it every week, doing walks, walking the whole Bear Creek, big creek in our area, in our town. And we do the whole thing, and we do it every Saturday and Sunday morning, take the dogs out, do their thing. And, you know, then we just kind of stay at home and do our barbecue, but we try and create an atmosphere, you know, like we're, you know, doing our own little party, our own little thing. We'll have a jam session, maybe, you know, bust out the instruments, do the barbecue in the backyard, play some music, enjoy the day as much as we can without people there. And it's just, that's the missing link, I guess.
Yep. You know? Speaking of music, Scott Stapp jumping on, knocking doors down here in just a few. We're going to throw a commercial your way, and when we come back, we'll play a snippet off of that album and jump right into that interview with Scott Stapp.
In March of 2020, Carlos Vieira, owner and founder of KDD Media Company, wrote a memoir about his own personal struggles entitled Knocking Doors Down. In his book, he relives his experiences as a drug addict and the ultimate path that helped to save his life. 100% of all sales of this book are donated to the Carlos Vieira Foundation's Race to Be Drug-Free campaign. Go to kddmediacompany.com to pick up a copy for you or a loved one in need of inspiration and motivation. Also available on Amazon in hardcover, paperback, and ebook.
How you like me now? Alive, 'cause I believe you tried to knock me out, but you couldn't drop. No, you couldn't drop me.
And we've got Scott Stapp with us.
What?
This is so awesome. How's it going, good sir?
Going good, man. Good to be with you guys.
Yes, thank you for your time. You're looking excellent, man, and I'm really enjoying the space between the shadows. Of course, your latest album that came out last year, and we'll talk about that and get into some of the stuff, because there's a couple songs on there for me, a little bit autobiographical and inspirational. What we want to touch on, of course, Knocking Doors Down, we're focusing on Mental Health Month right now, and you had a background of some issues with mental health and addiction. Yeah, where did it kind of start for you? Was it something that you noticed with childhood, or did it kind of as fame took off and success that it was just coping, or where for you really did it start?
You know, it just came out of the blue, right around sometime between the ages of 23 and 25. I just had almost a sudden onset of depression. Mm-hmm. And it really made no sense, because nothing in my life should have been a catalyst for that happening, because everything in my life was going awesome. Mm-hmm. All my dreams were coming true professionally and as an artist, and so it really goes to show that, it's something that doesn't necessarily have to be precipitated by any type of negative life event.
For sure.
It's an illness, and it can come on, and it really hit hard.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Within your family any sort of history of it? I know for me with addiction, it's runs on both sides of my parents' family, and my father, who's been in recovery. Geez, I think he's 19 years sober now. So, yeah. I know for me, it ran in my family along with depression and some other mental health issues, which I've suffered depression and anxiety.
I believe there were a couple family members on one side of my family that dealt with alcoholism and addiction, but to my knowledge, it's just hearsay. I don't know. I never met them.
Right.
But I'm sure, I'm sure there were some folks, especially on one side of my family that dealt with some things. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to Jason.
My immediate family, like my mother or father.
Yeah. I was talking to Jason the other day. I think it was yesterday, actually. Like, I just got anxiety right around 21 or 22, and everything's fine. Everyone's good. Family's good. Bills are paid. And it hits you. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't know where it comes from. You don't know why it comes. But like you said, everything in my life was fine. You know what I mean? I was doing okay financially and all that. And then bam, it just hits. So I totally relate to that. It sucks. And it's,
Yeah, man. It came out of nowhere, and then for me, I didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what it was.
Sure.
I just knew I felt different. It affected me really physically.
Right.
Yes.
No energy, weak, just wanted to isolate, stay in bed all day, not thinking clearly, but life had to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of touring and all kinds of things, and it couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I began to increase the self-medication. I think at that point in my life, there were already signs periodically that drinking was a problem.
Right.
I think more so to my friends than to me, because I think I was the only guy that, maybe once a week or every other week was blacking out and not remembering the night before, getting a little too out of control. But since it wasn't like daily or even every week there for a time, I didn't think there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even the people around me, even though they knew that was kind of a, not normal, maybe they didn't even really think it was a problem yet. I don't think any of us were thinking that way. But looking back, I can see there were indicators there. And so when the depression hit, man, I just began to self-medicate. I the drinking increased to feel better. And, it just led me down to a very dark place that just progressively got worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that all too well. I think a lot of it, you know, people forget, you know, don't think of the brain as an organ that also comes to different levels of maturity. And we know so little about our brains that when these things start to connect, I know for me, it was also about that late teens, early 20s where the depression really started to set in. And I kind of took it as being a little lost in the world. And my dad was just getting sober and not fully understanding that it's just kind of the way that my brain works. And, you know, it's taken me such a long time to acknowledge that I needed help.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And that's the key. And it took me many, many years to finally, you know, I guess surrender to the idea that it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, for sure.
That I didn't have to carry this. It wasn't weakness. It was actually a strength to reach out and let someone know that, you know, I was feeling a certain way or I couldn't control my drinking or whatever the issue may be, that help was needed. And so for anyone out there, man, that's listening, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. That's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it really is, because I think, you know, you said it best with the isolating is that's so common for us addicts to do. Yeah. Which is quite ironic because we really want connectivity, I think, or at least I know for me, and I just didn't know how to do it on a non-superficial level when I was out drinking, you know, or whatever it is, or, you know, hosting a concert or, you know, hanging out with rock stars or whatever, you know, hey, it's a big party and here we go. And obviously I'm connecting and I'm cool and whatever it was when really I just felt so empty and alone internally, that now having a support group, I've started to develop that connectivity that's improved my personal relationships, that with my kids and my family and everything. So it's a necessary thing to do, to take that step when you need that help.
Oh, absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, you know, for me, and I'll start with myself. You know, I had a little anxiety in social situations, looking back. And so I would drink to lose that.
Sure.
Loosen up and not feel that. I didn't really understand that's what it was at the time. But now I know that. Not everybody's like that.
Mm-hmm.
most people who I call normies, they're not like that. You know, they don't feel this little bit of uncomfortableness or anxiety around other people or meeting new people or in social gatherings or whatnot, and don't feel a need to have to self-medicate or inebriate or put something in their body to relax and be able to walk into those situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes to, you know, what you were saying about anxiety.
Yeah.
There was definitely some of that going on. It's so weird that, you know, I'm a guy that gets on stage and,
yeah,
and sings and performs in front of people. You think, God, how could this guy have anxiety? You know, I still to this day, before every show, I'm nervous before I walk out there.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
You know, I just know how to embrace it now. And I've learned to walk through, you know, my fears and walk through things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get out there and then it just goes away. And that connection is so special. Yeah. And I'm so glad that, you know, I'm in a place where I've found sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
I've found health and healing. You know, I'm at a place where I can enjoy life from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fresh place to be. You know, for those of you in recovery, man, we just take it 24 hours at a time. And for me, you know, those 24 hours add up, and you learn a new way of living life.
Sure.
And being in the now and being present, and just appreciating things that for so many years I took for granted, or wasn't present enough to appreciate.
Right.
And so I'm just grateful and thankful to have found this new lifestyle and this new life, and able to share my experience with others out there. That may still be battling with this, maybe on the fence, maybe even unaware until they hear our conversation.
Sure.
And they relate and go, wait a minute, maybe I do have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe the people around me are afraid to tell me, because that's very common.
Oh yeah.
Especially with younger people. You know, I think now in today's society, people are a lot more educated on mental health issues, mm-hmm. and on addiction and alcohol abuse issues. And so I think a lot of that stigma is coming off. And so people are talking about it more openly.
Yeah, for sure.
People are talking to their friends and, you know, letting people know, like, hey, man, is everything all right? Hey, let me be honest with you. And you'll always know someone cares about you and truly loves and cares about you if they start that sentence with, hey man, let me be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And share some truth in your life that maybe you don't want to hear, and then maybe it doesn't feel good to hear it, but maybe it's exactly what you need to hear, you know? Because yeah. I know my wife has been that for me.
Sure.
Yeah. I know that I've read a couple of interviews where you really talked about that your wife, and even the point in what she said, you know, Scott, it's the kids and I, or we're leaving if you don't get help.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. And you know, she had endured and stuck by me. And for so many years, while I tried to battle this on my own, without help,
yeah.
Just white knuckling it. And I'd make it 3 months. And then I'd go on a bender. You know, the kids were so young that, and nothing was going on at the house. So they weren't really aware of it. They just thought, oh, daddy's gone. He must be working.
Right.
And so eventually it got to the point where, you know, she knew that they were going to reach an age, and they were reaching an age where they were going to be aware that, there was something else going on. And also, you know, she had been on a roller coaster, man. And so she showed me some tough love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad I had a moment of clarity in the midst of a pretty crazy relapse, where I could think for a second and realize, man, I do not want to lose my wife and my family. And I also began to reflect on, in that moment, on everything else and how, you know, my disease and drugs and alcohol had affected the previous 10, 15 years of my life, yeah. and slowly taken away everything and everyone that I loved,
mm-hmm.
and had ruined and destroyed big portions of my life. And so having all that kind of sink in, you know, it was like, you know, I'm going to go get help, and I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to surrender, because I do not have the answer. I can't solve this. I've tried, and it just keeps getting worse. And that's really when true change started within me, is when the ego got out of the way. I got honest with myself, mm-hmm. and with others, and just said, hey, you know how to be sober. You know how to be healthy. You know how to overcome or get the proper care for depression, anxiety, whatever your issues may be.
Mm-hmm.
Help me.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever you say. And once I did that, true change began to happen. And now I'm sitting here with you guys 5.5 years sober later.
That's awesome.
And talking about a new record and helping other people.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Because that's what it's all about. Because when we're helping other people, we're outside of our own brains, man.
Yeah.
We're outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
And the worst thing for me, man, is to get locked up inside of here for too long. You know what I mean?
Oh, all too well.
You know what I mean? So fortunately, I have an outlet with writing and creating, you know, but I've got to come up for air, man.
Yeah, sure.
And stay connected and keep talking with people. And so I participate in, you know, a recovery meeting. I have a sponsor. I have people I talk to, and I change my lifestyle, you know, to everything to address the issues that I had, so I could finally embrace, you know, happiness and peace and love and a normal lifestyle, man. It's out there for people to have if they want it. And I think you guys have found that. And it's good for us to share and talk about it, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And I know that was, for me, it was interesting because as I was telling you before we started recording that Carlos Vieira that wrote his book, Knocking Doors Down, that the purpose of the podcast was our motto was, if I could help just one person, it'd all be worth it. Well, and I found for me, and I had told him recently, that you have helped one person, me, because it's given me now an outlet where I went from, you know, rock radio DJ, program director, and operations manager to now where I can really actually talk about this in this kind of form and have a totally different kind of connectivity that has been so incredibly helpful for me because it's given purpose to all the damage that I did with my addiction, you know.
It's so amazing that you bring up the word purpose, because it could be so easy for us to look back at the wreckage of our past and the dark days and the dark times and let that cause us to walk around with embarrassment and guilt and shame. And what we have to offer now by helping others that are going through the same things and by spreading the word and by being available to others in need, man, that gives us purpose.
Yes.
And that takes that mess and turns it into a message. And so it's so cool to hear you say that, because that's what you're saying. And that's what, not to take it off the seriousness of the topic, but that's what the first single off my new record, The Space Between the Shadows, Purpose for Pain, was all about. That was finding a purpose for that pain, man. When I did, it changed my whole mindset, and it made me reflect on those times. Of course, you know, there are things I wish I could change, but now I use those things and those experiences and those stories and those things that I share to connect and relate with people who are going through similar stuff. And in some cases, I'm like, hey, man, this is where it can end up, and I can tell you from personal experience. Or I know exactly where you are right now, man, and you don't have to be there anymore. And so, man, that's finding purpose. And I love what you said about helping, you know, even if it's just one person, you know what I mean? That's a powerful mentality to have. And that's really the key to long-term sobriety and staying sober. Is being open and willing to help other people. And I think that can impact people with depression or with anxiety. If you're helping someone else with those same issues, you're helping yourself while you're helping them. It's an interesting cycle that happens. And so, man, it's amazing to hear you say that, man.
I found it just so important that mentorship and being a mentee is such an integral part of it all as well. You know, of course, you also being a father, obviously, you know, we're mentors to our children. But through this process of sobriety as well, you know, like you mentioned, you have a sponsor still. So, you know, someone that you look to as a mentor. But it allows you to, you know, continue that cycle of helping one another by passing along the messages and lessons and not just through your art, which we do want to talk about the Space Between Shadows here in just a bit, which Survivor is my favorite song on the album. It just kick ass because when I came on to Creed, it was songs like Bullets and stuff like that that I was like, oh yeah, this kicks major ass, you know. But how are you finding the response? Is there people that are reaching out to you that are, you know, hey, Scott, thank you for sharing your story. It's helped me.
Yeah, you know what? The reaction has been, you know, just humbling, overwhelming. I read a lot of the mail that comes in from the fans and. Mm-hmm. And to hear them share their story and how, you know, this record and me opening up and sharing my story has helped them, it's been amazing to hear, you know, and just them saying that to me, you know, has solidified a purpose in me, has also continued to bring healing within me. And I appreciate them so much, and I'm so grateful that my situation and then what I share about those situations through the music has been able to connect with people and you know, bring them some level of healing and hopefully help them in their journey in life, man.
Scott, I got a question for you that someone that we work with passed along. I guess they knew some folks that you know as well when you were first starting in music, and so she wanted me to see if you could confirm the story that you were sleeping on a friend's on their floor or something like that because you didn't want to let your folks know that you were dropping out of school to pursue being a musician. Is there any accuracy to that at all?
I have spent many nights on a friend's couch or on a friend's floor. But as far as to do that because I was dropping out of school to pursue music, that part's the twist.
Mm. Okay.
I actually was enrolled in college, and in my senior year, already past midterms when Creed got a record deal. And so the only reason that I ended up not finishing my senior year is because we got, you know, shipped out to start showcasing and having to go here and having to go there and going to New York. And I couldn't finish. That's when I withdrew from school.
I think it worked out for you, though. I think you did pretty well.
Yeah, it ended up working out. But you know what? Something deep down inside of me has always wanted to finish, man. I was so close. I was 15 hours away.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, from graduation. You know, five classes. Damn. Already half the year. So I'm sure it's more now. If I was to go back, it's probably more the curriculum's changed, but right. At some point in my life, I definitely want to finish up that degree.
Yeah.
Just so when I tell my kids they got to, you know, go to college and finish the degree, they can't look at me and say, well, you didn't.
Right.
Just be like, you know, yeah, I did.
But what about you, Dad?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the worst part of being a parent. Nothing amplifies your hypocritical actions and words like parenthood, does it?
You're exactly right. You gotta live what you say because your kids, they're so smart, man. They'll point it out.
Oh God, yeah. My daughter, she is just she's a pistol. Mikey can confirm that. And boy, she keeps me on my toes with it. You know, 10 years old, and you know, but Dad, I heard you saying this, and then you were doing that. It's like, son of a, you're right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of shot myself in the foot for my future unborn kids who asked to get their first tattoo. I don't know what I'm going to tell them when I say no. You know what I mean? Like,
You don't want to do that as you're covered.
All you got to do is start ingraining in their brain, if you don't want them to, when they're little, how painful it is.
Yeah.
How much blood comes out and how big, you know, the needles.
Oh, yeah. It's funny you say that. My nephews asked me.
started planting fear just in their brain when as soon as they start noticing it.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe that'll work.
My nephews are like, did that one hurt or did this one hurt right here? I'm like, you can't imagine the pain that I felt when it was on my throat. It's something I hope you guys never go through. And they're just looking at me with their eyes wide open. I think we're good. I don't think they want any. So good. Thank you for that.
Scott, I just realized I thought I had interviewed you years ago, but I realized, no, this is our first conversation. So I don't really know much on the background of the formation of Creed, how you guys came together, because, I was kind of under the impersonation, too, that maybe you had left college and, then the band started and then eventually it took off. But how'd you guys meet? Was it something where you just saw Mark playing, guitar at a club and went, hey, I want to work with that guy? Or
no, Mark and I went to high school together.
Oh, okay.
In Orlando. And I knew he played guitar in high school, and he knew that I sang. And then we ended up, not knowingly, both at Florida State University years later. Probably, I want to say 4 years out of high school for me, 3 years out of high school for him. I was looking to start a band and mentioned it to a friend who also went to high school with us. And that friend said, Tremonti lives here. Maybe you guys should get together. And so we got together and started jamming and writing songs. Well, over the next year and a half or so, we ended up going through, a couple drummers and a few bass players or whatnot, and then ended up finding Scott Phillips and Brian Marshall. And so we formed in college.
Nice.
Brian was going to FSU. He actually graduated before we got a record deal. We were all in college, all friends, and working, going to college, and yeah, living the college life, and rehearsing and just looking back, I can't believe we did so much. just is crazy, man. But it was very organic and very real.
Mm. Yeah, nice. That's always cool to hear that when it goes that way. Yeah, I'm always interested. Do you recollect who came up with the band's name and how it came about? Was it like I've heard people where they wrote names down forever, or they threw out some name and they're like, yeah, that's it, we'll just call it that until we figure something else out, and they never changed the name.
Yeah, we had bounced around with different band names, and one day at rehearsal, Brian Marshall threw out a band that he had been in prior, and Creed was a part of their band name. It wasn't their band name. It was a word within their band name.
Mm-hmm.
And me being the primary lyricist, heard that word, and knew how well it connected, with what I was writing about and also I just think the word sounded so strong to all of us,
mm-hmm,
that it didn't take any convincing. I think it was kind of like a group. That's it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, all at once.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how it was born.
That's nice. Cool. Well, speaking of being primary lyricist, what was it like working on The Space Between Shadows? Of course, the new album, folks can go to scottstapp.com, get some cool deluxe bundles and stuff. I'm a big vinyl guy, so I'm going to have to jump on that. But how was the process with writing this? Because there is a lot of very strong lyrics in the music connected to your sobriety and being living a purposeful life and encouraging others to do the same.
Yeah, man. I had a lot to reflect on, when I started writing this record. I had finally had some real sober time under my belt for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I had really began the process of making serious changes in my life, changing old habits, doing a real 180, in terms of many aspects in my life. And so I had a lot of time, during the first couple years, of getting, reconnected with my family and just getting grounded and stable in my recovery, to really reflect and write down a lot of things. And so that's where this album came from. And I got together with some buddies of mine that I had written songs with before, in the past, Scott Stevens, Marty Fredrickson, who ended up producing the record. And we've been friends for a while. And then I wrote with Zach Malloy and from the Nixons and Blair Daly. We had all been writing buddies before. And we have such a good chemistry and camaraderie. That, you know, I things start small. You know, a lot of times, you know, with just me and one person, you know, me and a guitar and another guitar player, or me and just someone else on guitar, you know, trading stories, sharing ideas, me thumbing through notes or thumbing through lyrics, like, what do you think about this line, that line, and just starting to freestyle. I just had a lot in me, and surrounded myself with friends and people that I respected and admired as musicians, as collaborators, and as producers. The album came together, man. It's something that we're all proud of, and I was happy to share with the world.
Yeah, I know that when I was still working in radio, we're located in the Central Valley, near Sacramento, and you did a show there, and we sent some, I unfortunately couldn't make it, but we sent some listeners, and a few of them met you and just said it was the coolest experience, that you're not only a great show, but that you were such a gentleman, and it was like, they were like, it was like talking to a normal guy. And I'm like, well, yeah, he is a normal human being, you know?
Oh, that's cool. I appreciate that, but you're right, man. I am just a regular guy who happens to do music. You know, I'd like to think of myself that way. I'm probably, if you ask my wife, a lot stranger than I'd like to think I am. But, you know, I love my fans and love people and just try to let them know every time I meet them.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I definitely look forward to, hopefully once all this gets lifted with the COVID, if you make it back out to the West Coast, to be able to finally see you do some solo stuff. I'd seen Creed a couple of times, so it'd be cool to finally get to see what you're doing now in person and experience it.
Yeah, man. You know, we don't know when that day is going to come. You know, we're still, seems like, in the thick of things. Especially the concert business and the touring world. Yeah. So we want to make sure our fans are safe. You know, the band and crew is safe. And so when that day comes and, you know, can't wait to get back out on the road and do what I love and share these songs live, continue to share them live. You know, we toured a lot last year, all over the U.S. You know, we still have a European tour, slated for the end of October through November. You know, so we're keeping our fingers crossed that is going to happen. And so, you know, we're playing it day by day and we'll see what happens. So anyone who's currently got tickets to shows that I have on the books right now that were on sale, just stay in touch with my website and my social media accounts, because updates are coming very soon on which shows we're not going to be able to do because of this. And it's unfortunate, man, but you know, we all are in this together and want to keep everybody safe and stop the spread.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's such an odd dichotomy and just, I mean, you know, I'm 41, so you know, you and I are about the same age. Is just never having seen anything like this in my life whatsoever. Yeah. You know, I did my first AA Zoom meeting earlier this week, and it was like, wow, this is kind of a trip here. This is a weird way to, you know, normally you do your circle at the end and you know, talk the steps and work in the steps, and it was quite a different way of going about it, for sure.
Yeah, man, the world is forever changed. I think in some ways people, and it's just my opinion, in some ways people have found that you know, they can get a lot done, you know, at home.
Yeah.
And through their computers. So, and then, you know, in terms of how we understand, you know, contagious illnesses, just like the regular cold and flu.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to be like I have a heightened awareness of people around me when they cough and they sneeze, you know, just like, man, if you're sick, stay home.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, we give that to each other. So probably going to be a lot of people wearing masks for a long time. I don't know, man. I don't know what the world's going to look like, but I know we're going to get through this, and be stronger because of it. That's my hope.
I think so. And I've noticed, at least folks that I've been talking to, that, you know, again, it, you know, an adversity becoming an advantage of now you are around, say, your family more often or what, you know, whereas maybe you were out, and people are just kind of refocusing on family a little bit different. And I know I have. Which I've just tried to look at the gift of what is in this situation. Okay, so my kids and I, we can't, you know, I like to take them to concerts. You know, we did Tool last year and you know, stuff like that. So we had to cancel some different shows. But, you know, we've kind of refocused and listened to a different variety of music at home or building Legos, playing games, whatever it is. So it's we took the negative and made it a positive so that we could actually bond a lot more.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've got to find the silver lining the best we can to keep our head above water. You know, my heart goes out to those that, you know, are having to deal with some harsh realities. You know what I mean? Like their rent, groceries.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of organizations out there that are there for you. So, you know, reach out to those. You know, hopefully we can all get back to work soon.
Yeah.
But there definitely has been some silver linings in this, you know, with the time spent with our kids and our families that we wouldn't normally have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mr. Stapp, is there anything else you would like to let people know other than obviously ScottStapp.com, the new album, The Space Between Shadows, is available there on digital platforms, you know, Spotify, Apple Music and such?
Just like my new single, Survivor, just went to radio a few weeks ago. So if you haven't heard that, stream it. Go to Spotify, Apple Music, wherever your streaming platform is, and check that out, and then hit me up on my socials. Let me know what you think. You know, and that's the man. It was great talking to you guys.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It was great talking to you. It's cool. I've been a fan of the music for a long time, and I would like to take the step a little further just to say, as an inspiration of what you've done with your life, even bigger fan of that, and you know, something that I could when I get closer and more down the line into my sobriety to see those kind of positive changes happen. So from a personal level, really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much, man. And hey, man, one day at a time. And we can do this, man. Stay strong. And I appreciate you guys. And look forward to seeing you once we're back out on the road.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Make sure you hit me up. Come backstage. Say hi.
Dude, that'd be awesome.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And for those that are listening, if you're following us on social media, that's Knocking Doors Down on Instagram and Facebook. We have shared the latest single up there from YouTube, so go check out Scott's song, Survivor. My favorite song on the album. It's the kind of rock that I love, you know. Good, hard rock, inspirational, motivational, and it's a great album. So, folks, make sure to check it out, all right?
Thank you guys, man. Thank you so much, dude.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. The Carlos Vieira Foundation, along with Knocking Doors Down, joined together with the Race to End the Stigma program. The Race to End the Stigma campaign was created to not only change the way people perceive those who are living with mental illness, but also how those who are affected perceive themselves. To find out more about the scholarship program, head over to carlosvieirafoundation.org for more info.
Oh man, that was a good conversation. Scott Stapp's an awesome guy. Again.
Super cool dude.
His new album is out. Follow him on social media everywhere at Scott Stapp, and definitely appreciate him giving his time to the audience and speaking very open and honestly about his mental health and addiction issues. As of course, this month we've been highlighting Mental Health Awareness Month along with the Carlos Vieira Foundation, and more details available on the Carlos Vieira Foundation and the Race to End the Stigma program that focuses on mental health, available at carlosvierafoundation.org. Yeah, as we wrap up this month, I know, you know, primarily Mikey and myself, Chris, have been talking with folks concerning, you know, the mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Chris, having known me for well over a decade, you know, when I talk to people, it just, the shit percolates in my brain. And so it's,
yeah,
it's,
of course,
it's really been put out that challenge to me in my own head of, okay, how are you dealing with your mental health and stability? What are you doing? Because I am such a people person, and that's what chills me out. And since I haven't had that, I've had to kind of find different ways of connecting.
Yeah,
you know, and
this podcast has probably been pretty cool in that regard, right? That we're still able in these times of quarantine to connect and have deep, meaningful conversations with people, even if it's via Zoom, via Skype, whatever, remotely. We're still able to, you know, connect with each other. Like we were just saying the other day, our Xbox is the only way that some of our friends have been communicating lately. Right. When we all hop on Call of Duty, we'll all get in there and then we just talk about our day. Like we're all just in the party chat talking, just kind of like, you know, normally we'd be at each other's houses, but you know, it's a way of staying sane and trying to keep the normalcy going in these crazy times.
Yeah, to the best of our ability. Anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Naraki?
Hang in there, guys. I don't know if there's light at the end of the tunnel, but just hang in there, wash your hands, all that shit. Let's get through it together.
Wash your hands, all that
all
shit.
All that shit.
That's
all
what
that
we're trying to
off of your hands.
Off of your hands.
Fucking over it!
Hey, coming up as we head towards June, we've got some great episodes for you. We'll be welcoming David Siegel, Marine Corps veteran, suffered some really serious tragedies, including the loss of life for fellow soldiers in the thick of it, loss of children while he was serving in the Middle East, came home. Struggles with PTSD, and he was very open and honest with us. He'll be kicking off the month, and then we've got Chris Opinski, gentleman here. He also happened to have served in the Marine Corps, but his addiction started really early on in life, and he'll share his story. And then Tony Hoffman, man.
Hoff!
Cool conversation. He was a badass dude in what he's doing now. A guy that was excelling in athletics. When he is in seventh grade, he was getting touted by different high schools wanting him to go there to play basketball and other stuff. And he just never felt this sense of normalcy, of course, turning to drugs, served time in prison, but came out on the other end, and now he is just totally knocking doors down.
Really
inspiring others, doing amazing work for others and himself and the way he's turned his life around through his story. And then we'll be talking to Carlos Vieira, the author of Knocking Doors Down, the guy that said, hey, along with my book, Jason, you crazy son of a bitch, let's do a podcast. You got it.
Son of a bitch.
So we're going to be talking to him about the significance of racing. He races stock cars and what that's played into his sobriety and helping him maintain a sobriety and really spawning on a lot of other stuff, including the 5150 brand, where that came from. We won't get into that totally, but you can get more on that by purchasing the book right now at kddmediacompany.com.
.5150 is a lifestyle. We believe in pushing yourself, finding your passion, knowing your dreams, and working hard, always striving to make those dreams a reality. We believe life's too short to sit back and say, what if? Go after it, grab it, and make it happen. Being 5150 is committing to that long, hard road ahead that you know is going to be tough, but the most rewarding. That's living the madness. That's 5150. If you're living the 5150 lifestyle, then celebrate by rocking the goods. Listeners of Knocking Doors Down, head over to 5150LTM.com. That website again, 51FIFTYLTM.com.
This podcast contains the views and opinions of the Knockin' Doors Down hosts and their guests to the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for informational purposes only. And because each person is sharing their unique perspective, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Views and opinions expressed in the podcast and website are our own and do not represent that of our places of work. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors. Privacy is of the utmost importance to us. For those wishing anonymity, people, places, and scenarios mentioned in the podcast have been changed to protect confidentiality at the request of certain guests. This website or podcast should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care in a legal sense or as a basis for expert witness testimony. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the podcast or website. In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a doctor-patient relationship. If you find any errors in any of the content of this podcast or blogs, please send a message through the contact page. This podcast is owned by KDD Media Company.